How's the simulation treating you?
I took the red pill. I don't like it.
Colin?
I want to go back.
The blue pill I took is doing some stuff in my pants, and I'm not quite sure it took the right one.
Oh, Jesus.
Was it a little blue pill, or was it more of a tablet?
It was kind of a little one, yeah.
So before we jump into it, just want to say thank you for the ongoing feedback we're receiving. We're getting a lot of messages lately, so that's great. If you'd like to send us some feedback, you can find us on Twitter at RealDMC or send a message to feedback@realdmc.com. We'd also love to get a review on Spotify or iTunes or wherever you're actually listening to this podcast. We thought it would be fun to start sharing little snippets of feedback, so just a couple quick ones from listener VB. I really like your podcast and wondered if you were going to go back to the year in review format, which I personally enjoyed a lot. I think the answer to that one is probably no. And the reason being is if you go back and listen to the beginning of our podcast, that's how we got started. We were doing 1 year at a time and we had to watch a lot of movies. And I think we sort of petered out on that. So Colin, Marcus, your thoughts on returning to the year in review format?
I actually really enjoy it. I think it's great to look at a whole set of movies from the year. But as Dave said, it is quite time consuming. We are having enough trouble recording one movie every couple of weeks now. And watching that many movies just is not going to work with our kind of other commitments.
All right, Colin, any thoughts on year in review?
It is fun. It's interesting. I do wonder if as we go into the 90s, if we were to do it, if it would be as good as the 80s. Certainly a fun format. But yeah, it's very time consuming.
As we were going through it while we were in the 80s, it seemed like we had a lot of stuff to say. And as we got towards the end of the 80s, less things to say. I think it's just the time in life when movies were making a significant impact on you. Certainly the 80s were it for me, at least as a kid growing up.
We can always do it like a one-off. I would love to do 1994, although that's just going to take forever because there's so many good movies. And I want to watch them all again.
That's an interesting idea. For those of you out there that have listened to the year in review and enjoy that format, send us a suggested year and maybe we'll jump back and just do one randomly because that would be kind of fun. Second quick bit of feedback. So we received a question from Reno Hightower. It's also somebody that left us a review on iTunes at one point. So if you are the same person, thank you for that. But they sent us a question. You guys keep referencing a list of top 238 movies. 238 is a really weird number. Why are you using it that way and what list are you referencing? So Colin, this one's to you, I believe.
I cannot limit myself to 100. And that is literally it.
Don't box me in, man.
That's it. And so when I put together my list of my favorite movies, it came out to 238. And that's it.
Do you remember which podcast it was that you just kind of rolled that off of your tongue and then Marcus and I busted up? I can't remember what it was.
I'm assuming it was the first one.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was early on.
But Marcus, you started referring to your favorite movies as your 238.
Yeah, I think it's catching on.
It's going to take over the nation.
Somebody grab top 238 movies domain really quickly because I'm sure it's going to catch on like wildfire.
IMDb has their top 250. We cut 12 off of that. We go top 238. It's more exclusive.
It's more exclusive by 12.
You want to be in our list, not IMDb's, don't you?
Moving on. We thought it would be a lot of fun and go back and look at one of the most influential science fiction movies made and probably one of the most influential movies made in the 90s. Are you kidding me? This thing is hugely influential. We're going to talk about that. 1999's The Matrix.
Whoa. Have you ever had a dream, Neo, that you were so sure was real? What if you were unable to wake from that dream? How would you know the difference between the dream world and the real world?
What is happening to me?
The answer is out there, Neo. It's the question that drives us.
What is the Matrix?
The Matrix is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
What truth?
Human beings are a disease. You are a cancer of this planet. And we are the cure.
Get me the hell out of here!
Welcome to the real world. A Unfortunately, no one can be told what the Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself.
So by way of general introduction, this film maintains an 8.7 rating on the IMDb. Does that surprise you, Marcus?
No. I don't think it's influential sci-fi. I think the filming and the technique and a lot of stuff they did in it was a lot more influential and interesting.
That's how it's influencing other movies.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, I'm hearing it as sci-fi. Whereas I think of, like, the great sci-fi movies of all time, you're thinking more of, like, Dune or Close Encounters or 2001 and some of those.
Did you say Dune? Which Dune were you talking about?
The first Dune's a very influential sci-fi movie. It may not be a great movie. We don't have to get into that right now.
No, it is a great movie.
Guys, we're not going into the Dune rabbit hole. We are waving off of the Dune rabbit hole.
What if Dave said it's the highly influential cyberpunk?
There you go.
Spectacular.
Like, for sure. I'm not trying to take anything away from The Matrix. I just don't think of it as much sci-fi. So let's get into it. Let's not debate semantics. Let's debate who looks best in leather.
So the film was actually a huge success. So commercially, critically, you name it. So it actually made $171 million in the U.S. box office on a budget of $63 million. It went on to make $463 million globally. And if you look at the sequels, they went down in quality. The Matrix Reloaded came in at 7.2. It was very successful in terms of its release because it made $741 million globally. I don't believe it was fairly well received after that because The Matrix Revolutions went on to get a 6.8 rating on the IMDb and made $427 million globally. So Colin, I don't think Marcus and I had a chance to watch the sequels, but you did. Just a quick thought and summary on what you thought of the sequels, maybe?
I went in having not watched the sequels in a very long time. Had this memory that they were really not very good movies. I watched them again. What I realized is that they're actually good movies. It's just that in comparison to the original Matrix movie, it's so hard to live up to that. And they're very different movies. There's a lot more focus on Zion and, you know, the human race. None of it really resonated that much with me. You know, you're really only setting yourself up for disappointment by trying to then go through the rest of the mythology and try to tell the rest of this story. I didn't really connect with the rest of the story.
Do you think they had the rest of the story planned with the first one, or they just said, oh, this was such a big hit, let's make a sequel to make more money?
I feel like maybe they did.
They did have it planned, like a thought of it?
Well, they'd worked on it for so long. I think they maybe had even written it in the early 90s.
They wrote the initial script before they made Bound, and apparently they spent 5 years developing the script and had 14 different versions of at least the original Matrix. I have no idea if they had an extended trilogy planned or a broader story. What I remember my takeaway from the sequels was the second one was, it felt really way up its own ass in terms of all the philosophical stuff, like the architect and trying to go deep into philosophy and mythology. And it had some cool action sequences. That's what I remember. Like, I remember the fight in that has the stairways and all that kind of stuff. And so the visuals were actually pretty amazing still, but I don't remember the story being that great.
It's not for me, right? I think... They try to make characters out of software programs, and that just doesn't interest me.
You're not a big fan of Tron, then, I take it?
No, I'm not.
I don't really know that anybody is by that.
I would have been 100% fine with them never making any sequels.
The amazing thing about the first Matrix is it came out, and no one knew what to expect, and it had these special effects that were amazing. You hadn't seen something like that ever.
Right.
It's similar to T2. Like, you had this huge event of crazy effects just from fight scenes, jumping, bullet time, all that stuff blew you away. Even the cinematography for it, how they shot it all is amazing. And then it just had this mind-bending story around it that warped your whole perception of what the hell? Like, it's just a crazy, crazy storyline, which is really cool. A lot of it may or may not work, I don't know. Definitely made you think, and it had this really cool feeling to it all. It is that cyberpunk. It's like the internet is this 1999 when it came out. The internet was very, very new at the time. And it had these cool hackers with the glasses and the trench coats, rave music, and just this whole scene. It was really cool. Like, it blew you away when you saw that on the screen. You'd never seen anything like that before. Wow.
That's what I mean when I was talking earlier about it being influential.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
It's a very significant movie. I was trying to think, what are the most significant movies of, say, the 1990s? And the two that immediately came to mind were The Matrix and Pulp Fiction. Those were the two that jumped to my head. I think the Jurassic Park, I would say, is in there as well. Maybe just for showing what computer graphics can do. So I actually went and did a search. I'm like, you know, is this, you know, Matrix most influential? Because I was curious to see if other people had this opinion and if it was going to show up. So just a couple quick quotes. There's a Screen Rant article by Colin McCormick. He notes it as being one of the 10 most culturally influential movies of the 1990s. And he says, The Matrix presented a film unlike anything that we had seen before. The film introduced the idea of bullet time in filmmaking, brought Hong Kong action influence to the mainstream, and built science fiction mythology that still holds up to this day. The mythology part, we're going to have maybe a couple of questions about. The construct of the Matrix and what can and can't be done, if you really take a hard look at it, it's interesting. There might be some cracks there. One other quote. So Jacob Thompson wrote an article on the website A Taste of Cinema, and he mentions that it would be impossible to list all the Matrix science fiction successors here, but example include Kurt Wimmer's Equilibrium and Ultraviolet, Zack Snyder's Watchmen, and the Underworld series. And I have to say, the Zack Snyder call out there is, I thought, was really interesting, because I had forgotten the emphasis and the focus on shell casings in this movie, like mm-hmm. with the shell casings flying out and hitting the ground. But when I saw that, I'm like, wow, that looks so much like, you know, particularly Watchmen. There's a scene in Watchmen where the Night Owl is actually shooting down this water tower, and the way that the shell casings are coming out, it looks almost the same.
Like in the helicopter, the minigun with the shell casings falling from the sky. Really, really well shot.
The photography in this movie is insane. It's amazing. Yeah,
it's done by Bill Pope, the same cinematographer who did Baby Driver. So I thought that's kind of cool.
Huh, interesting.
As far as Underworld goes, all I have to do is thank you to The Matrix for putting Kate Beckinsale in black latex and leather.
Who wears it better, Kate Beckinsale or Carrie Ann Moss?
Well, Carrie Ann Moss, she looks so fantastic in this movie. I'll give it to her.
She's great.
This is where Chad Stahelski, who is the director of John Wick, he doubled for Keanu during this movie and did stunt coordination work as well. They formed a relationship, and that ultimately, I think, led to John Wick. If the legacy of The Matrix is it allowed John Wick to exist, then hey, more power to The Matrix. It makes The Matrix that much better.
Well, I mean, Keanu just, The Matrix like revived his whole career.
Yeah, I feel like he went into this phase where he was doing a bunch of action movies and then it cooled off and really wasn't doing much. And then boom, The Matrix. He's had an interesting career, right? He got like,
oh, for sure.
River's Edge, Dangerous Liaisons. Yeah, I know he's totally miscast, but I still liked him. Bill and Ted, Parenthood, that's a good role. And then he goes Point Break, which is just pure cheese, guilty pleasure, love it.
Fantastic.
Dracula, you have to look back to Dangerous Liaisons. I think he learned he should not do any English accents.
Stay away from period pieces.
And then he went into like an independent film phase, like My Own Private Idaho, Little Buddha, even Cowgirls Get the Blues, and Much Ado About Nothing. And then all of a sudden he pivots and he starts doing action movies. And then boom, The Matrix. And he was like a superstar.
Yeah, but even after that, though, he quieted off again for a long time.
Yeah, this movie and the sequels in 2003, I think people got like The Matrixed out because he really didn't do anything until John Wick. I mean, he did some stuff, but nothing really good.
It's all minor.
Until 2014 and John Wick. And that really revived his career. I think Lawrence Fishburne, same thing. He had like a really good career up until in The Matrix, which he blew up. And then what happened after that? Not a whole lot.
I think that the interesting part that makes The Matrix is you have this mind-bending plot and world, or two worlds, so to speak. And they kind of unravel it all in the first one. And so that's where the second one's. All right, we already know the world building. We already know all the setup. You're in The Matrix. You're out of The Matrix. So there's not much more to capture. There's like evil computers, and we're going to try and kill the evil computers. Whereas like, say, Star Wars and some of those, it's more about politics and people and characters and interactions. The global picture isn't as interesting as the smaller stories, right?
Well, Dave, I think you might have said it most eloquently.
Are you saying I'm not eloquent?
No. I'm just saying that Dave just may have said it most eloquently when he said that with The Matrix Reloaded, that it was up its own ass.
Right.
Yeah.
What I recall from that is, you know, the architect, and you had the French guy who was supposed to represent something, and you had the keymaster. And I mean, you can't really, I would challenge you, I guess, to describe the mythology that was rolled out in that movie and what each of those characters are and how they fit together. But, you know, with the whole anomaly in The Matrix, and it's a looping thing and all that shit. So, but we can move off the sequels for now.
Yeah. No, yeah. Let's just focus on the first one. It's so much better and worth it.
Just a couple other things, just in terms of the recognition for the original Matrix. It was selected in 2012 by the U.S. Library of Congress for preservation in the National Film Archives. That's a, you know, that's a pretty significant recognition. And the other thing is, it did actually garner 4 Academy Awards. So it was nominated for 4 Academy Awards, and it won 4 Academy Awards for film editing, sound mixing, and visual effects. Obviously, visual effects. So with John Gaeta being the effects.
Overrated.
No, I mean, it's amazing. So, and what was interesting about that is it went 4 for 4 at the Academy Awards. but they did not receive any nominations in terms of, say, Best Picture or anybody in the acting categories, which is probably understandable.
I think even beyond the bullet time, it's so amazing. Even today, you still see it being used, is the multi-camera and being able to like stop time and then rotate.
Yeah.
Not just the bullets zipping by you and whatever, the dodging of the bullets, but the like stopping, rotating the cameras, and then starting the scene again with the camera rotated. So innovative with the camera work. And you see that in sports all the time now. They do that with the...
Oh my God, yeah. You know, that's exactly what it is. It's just like on ESPN commercials for the NFL. Yeah.
Or the touchdown cam, right? The 360 touchdown cam.
And this was, what, 20 years ago that they made this amazing technology that they did, and like really, really innovative. Definitely well-deserved Oscars for that.
So how about your history with this movie in terms of, do you remember the first time you saw it? Was it, you know, a significant event?
It was. Me, Andy, and Tom went out and saw it on a Friday night. And I believe Tom woke up early back in the days. I think he was working at IBM in those days. And he probably woke up at like 4 a.m. or something ridiculous. And he fell asleep watching the movie. And he thought it was the most boring movie ever.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He still dislikes it to this day. Me and Andy's minds were blown and we loved it.
Yeah, my experience was I didn't know much of anything about this movie. For whatever reason, I had very little understanding of what movie we were going to go see. And I was working at LucasArts at the time. And we ended up taking the afternoon off. And so we went as a group. And all I really knew going into it was Keanu Reeves was holding an M16 on the poster. That's all I knew. I'm like, what is this? I have no idea what this movie is. And then,
what more do you want?
But then I was just blown away and I walked out. I'm like, wow, that movie is pretty awesome. I'd say that's probably a top 20 theater going experience for me in terms of getting an unexpected positive result from walking into a movie.
For sure. Yeah. It's also such early days of you didn't get all the previews and all the research and all this stuff spoiled and done to death. It was still like a little bit of time before that.
Yep.
Yeah. It was like a trailer. And that was it.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about going from the lowest of expectations to just being wowed. That was pretty much my experience because I'd seen the trailer and I thought it was going to be like another Bill and Ted in a sci-fi movie.
Johnny Mnemonic? Was he Bill or Ted?
He was Ted.
Ted Theodore Logan.
He's Ted? Okay.
Yeah. And in the trailer, you know, you see him go, whoa.
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 Weren't they doing like posters of like, what is the Matrix?
Yeah. And there was a website, whatisthematrix.com.
Yeah. And I remember that.
Yeah. But I don't think I was really into that until after I'd seen the movie. And then I was like all over it. Couldn't stop thinking about it. I mean, the movie was just so revolutionary and amazing. It just blows you away. I think the opening scene might be one of the most awesome and surprising opening scenes to a movie I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
You have no fucking idea what's going on.
You don't know who the bad guy is and who's the good guy.
But you just want more.
It sucks you in immediately, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I think also like one of the biggest pieces is the soundtrack. And it just was such a current soundtrack. Still listening to the music now, it captures that era of the late 90s, early 2000s. Rotten Zombie, Prodigy, Propellerheads, Rage Against the Machine. It's just that grungy metal rock.
Don't forget Rob D when they're entering the Matrix and the cool, the cool beats when they all have their glasses and their trench coats as they usually do when they're walking out.
Wait, are you talking about Club to Death?
Yeah, I think that's the name of it.
Yeah. Oh, I love that song. It's so good.
It's a great song. I mean,
in fact, I think you probably recall we were working our way down to L.A.
I recall this.
Before we got on Highway 5, we decided we gotta stop at Best Buy and pick up some music. Got to get the Matrix soundtrack.
Nice.
And I think I'm pretty sure that I didn't buy the soundtrack. Like, that's what I wanted. But I ended up getting the score by Don Davis. And so I was very disappointed that music wasn't on there.
Oh, no, I remember that. And then you and I had a brief debate as to whether or not we should drive back and try again at a different Best Buy or something like that.
Right. But we also, maybe as the booby prize, we picked up some Creed. And we listened to that as well on our drive. So
God bless the late 90s / early 2000s.
Yeah, I wonder how much is because it's at an age where in our late 20s, we're a lot more influenced by the movie, or if it was, I don't know if you watched it if you first saw it when you're in your 40s or something, or if kids coming to it today or not.
I feel like yes, the answer is yes. But also, like, if you're a kid today and you watch The Matrix for the first time, you're seeing stuff that you've already seen before, not specifically in the movie, but all those tricks and techniques and the fighting, you know, the wire work. You've seen this type of thing before.
But are they still fucking cool or what?
I think they're cool. It's just not as cool. It's not as...
You're not as influenced
by it? As big of a wow moment as when we watched it because we hadn't seen that stuff before.
Well, let me tell you one quick story. You know, when Dylan became old enough, so my son became old enough to begin, you know, I wanted to watch movies and share movies with him. I think he was like 11 or 12. I'm like, hey, you want to watch The Matrix? And for whatever reason, because I was pushing it on him, he rebelled and said, I don't want to watch that movie. That movie looks stupid. You don't even know anything about this movie. And to this day, he has not seen The Matrix. And he came walking in the room earlier today. And I said, hey, we're talking about The Matrix. And he looked at me and he said, I'm still not going to watch that movie on principle. So hopefully maybe I'll be able to change his mind at some point. Dylan, listen to this podcast and be inspired.
Does he listen?
No. Okay, well, you guys want to move on to the cast?
Sure. We covered a couple, but we can...
Yeah, I think we covered most of Keanu Reeves. I guess one thing that's really interesting is when you do the research on who else was offered this role. So well known that Will Smith was offered this role and turned it down and later regretted it tremendously, said it was the biggest blunder of his career. But as I was going through this and doing research, I also saw Val Kilmer, Brad Pitt, Johnny Depp was apparently being pushed hard at the end when it came down to Johnny Depp and Keanu Reeves. Now, I know Colin's smiling, and I'm wondering if it's because David Duchovny and David Schwimmer were both apparently considered for the role of Neo.
So, David Schwimmer, oh my God.
I read some of the same things that you did, and it was like they kept popping up, so-and-so turned down the role of Neo. And I'm just like laughing. Are these just this fake internet rumors? Because, right. So like you said, David Schwimmer, right?
David Schwimmer, he's the best. Whoa.
When I read David Duchovny, I was like, oh, come on, really? No. Okay. John Cusack lobbied hard for the role of Neo. I seriously doubt that John Cusack would be lobbying for that role. Nicolas Cage turned down the role of Neo due to scheduling conflicts.
That one I don't see. I'm sorry.
My oh my God, would that be fucking amazing and awful at the same time? Mark Wahlberg, that's where I was like, okay, no. There's no way that Mark Wahlberg was considered for the role of Neo. Johnny Depp, I could see maybe. And none of the studio wanted Brad Pitt and Val Kilmer because that's what studios do.
Val Kilmer would have been interesting. Could have done an interesting
version. Yeah, I think it would have been a little too dark. I think I think Keanu does such a better role with it.
Well, I think Keanu does a great job. I'm kind of shocked and surprised at what's going on around me, right? He has a little bit of that natural energy, and I think it works perfectly in this movie.
Yeah, exactly.
He's very zen, and that translates into Neo, and Neo is sort of zen. It just fucking works. Like Will Smith, it would have been a completely different movie. It would have still been like a huge hit, but it would have been a very different Neo. Yeah,
his energy is so different. He's just a hyped up Neo.
I couldn't really see Will Smith doing it and playing it, you know, a little bit straighter or calmer. You'd see him on like a zinger or a one-liner here or something like that because he's really good at it.
I was going to say the Independence Day Will Smith. That doesn't work.
Oh my God, could you imagine that?
No,
Independence Day Will Smith? Yeah. No.
There's almost no comedy in this movie at all, right? Is there?
There's like just a tad.
Very, very low. Like maybe Tank and Dozer have a little bit of joking around with them, but not Tank and Dozer. Did you watch the movie?
we'll talk about them a little later in the cast.
No, I wasn't planning to, so you can jump on that one.
Let's go deep on the tertiary characters.
So I love the fact that Will Smith turned down The Matrix to do Wild Wild West.
a movie that I still have never seen, actually.
Well,
I think I've seen it.
Don't, because it is just trash.
Yeah, I heard it was bad, so just left at that. One other thing, though, that's really interesting is when you go through the production side of this, the physical training in support of this is pretty amazing, right? So they did 4 months of training before they started filming, and there's a whole bunch of stuff about Keanu and his approach to this that's pretty impressive. He actually had just had neck surgery, and his legs were, experiencing partial paralysis. But he still insisted on doing the upper body training and the punching and all that. And it's one of the reasons why apparently you don't see Neo kick in this movie as much as they were expecting him to do because he was dealing with the results of that surgery. Look,
if they wanted someone to kick, they would have just hired Crispin Glover.
Nice. Someone's got to find the Letterman insert right there.
I'm strong, I'm strong. I can arm wrestle. I can kick.
Okay. I'm going to go check on the top 10.
Yeah, anything else you guys want to say about Keanu other than I just think that this happens to be the perfect mashup of movie and actor, in my opinion.
Yeah, it really worked well for him. And completely unexpected, too. Yeah, he was in Speed and Point Break, but this is not those roles. It's very, very different. And he wasn't as cool in those roles, and he's so cool in this role. It really comes across, too. I think it's just impressive.
Yeah, I mean, look, I made fun of it during the big jump, the rooftop jump, and he's like, whoa. But, oh my God. I think he might be the only person who could just nail that line. And when you watch the movie in context,
it works.
I just want to say, whoa, back, Yeah, he perfectly fits this role. That's it.
Lawrence Fishburne as Morpheus. I kind of love the Morpheus character. I guess Lawrence Fishburne himself described it as a melding of Darth Vader and Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's what he was going for. And apparently also when he saw his own character in the movie, when he watched it, he said that Morpheus kind of scared the shit out of him. He brought a certain intensity to the role. This is a great performance from Lawrence Fishburne. It's kind of fun because he gets to play a little bit of that kind of the Zen master energy. He gets to, you know, do the physical fighting with Neo. Obviously, he has the leadership role. And through it all, he has a pretty badass look. I have to say, though, those glasses, though, that he has that you pinch and just put on the bridge of your nose, it feels like those would be kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah, I'm not sure how well those would work. No, he's fantastic in the role, and he carries the character so well, and he has such a calm energy to him, and he just exerts confidence and leadership. You can see it from all the other characters, too, and how they interact with them and just respect him so much. It's an impressive role.
You buy his intensity and his focus and his belief in what he's doing.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It's great.
Yeah, he's exuding cool and wisdom at the same time.
Yeah.
I know that there were some other people that they had up for that role. I think actually Val Kilmer. I think it was that they were saying Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer was also up for the role of Trinity.
I think they were saying if Will Smith played Neo, they wanted Val Kilmer to play Morpheus. Because I've heard Gary Oldman, Samuel L. Jackson, apparently Russell Crowe, he like read the script and was like, I don't fucking understand this. No, it's stupid.
Was this before or after he made Virtuosity, though, just for clarity?
That's a good question. Yeah.
Gary Oldman would probably do a pretty good job with it.
Oldman wouldn't be interesting, but that's the thing, you know, like, can you imagine really anyone else other than Larry Fishburne?
Yeah, he's perfect for it, so it's not a...
No, he's just perfect.
So you have Carrie Ann Moss as Trinity. She seems to fit into it perfectly. She has really good organic, natural chemistry with Keanu Reeves. The two of them just seem to work really well together. She carries that edge of coolness and even authority at the end when she takes command of making the decision about what they're going to do with Morpheus. And she looks great. She looks fantastic. So Wu Ping Yen was the stunt coordinator that they brought in from Hong Kong. So he had done a bunch of really famous movies like Drunken Master with Jackie Chan. He defined a fighting style for each of the actors. Because of the way that Carrie Ann Moss carried herself, he made her
more graceful.
Agility. That was kind of what he gave her. It was just interesting reading about how he analyzed each of the actors' strengths and said, okay, I'll build a fighting style around that.
Yeah, I think she does an amazing job with the role. She's super, super strong, super tough. She carries it so well. She's able to do it, you know, both looking great and graceful and able to exude that strength that she has. It's really, really impressive. The one thing I'm not sure if I bought the love story aspect.
The love part of it, yeah.
Really? I think they have great chemistry together.
They work well together. I didn't believe Neo's her true love or anything like that. And it didn't matter that much. It got that one scene across. It was fine.
No,
it wasn't.
No. I don't think she really believed that he was the one. But then the Oracle had told her that she would fall in love with the one. And then I think you see her through the course of the movie realizing that she's like falling in love with this guy. And she's like, yeah.
Fucking Oracle.
Of course, the last scene, you know, when the Sentinels are in the ship. And I think it works. I totally think it works.
I see where Marcus is coming from here in terms of it feels like a little bit of a hard pivot a little bit or directional change. I think what you need is you need the equivalent of the scene in the Millennium Falcon when Leia's trying to do something and Han comes up behind her and he helps her click it into place or whatever it is. And there's at least that interaction. Well, if they had maybe one or two just quick scenes of that on the Nebuchadnezzar, then that would probably do something to at least build a road to the love proclamation. I think it feels a little abrupt to me, but it works fine ultimately.
Well, he's not a rogue, you know. I don't agree, but that's okay.
Hugo Weaving plays Agent Smith, and I love this performance. This is so much fun.
He's my acting MVP.
Apparently what he said he was going for was half robot, half human, no distinct accent. He altered his speech pattern to try to make it accent-free. The great thing about Agent Smith in this is he's supposed to be this buttoned-up computer program or whatever, and he just gets more and more pissed off as the movie goes on. Like, that's what's fun about it, too, because so there's a little bit of like frustration and anger that is just boiling underneath the surface, and the look is great, too. Love the voice, love the mannerisms, and I don't know, I think this is just he makes an awesome villain is what it comes down to.
Yeah, his voice is fantastic.
Seriously, I'll just turn around and say like, Mr. Anderson. Yeah. Love the way he pronounces everything. Apparently he was trying to go for 1950s newscaster.
One life, you're Thomas A. Anderson, program writer for a respectable software company. You have a social security number, you pay your taxes, and you help your landlady carry out her garbage.
Almost like Walter Cronkite a little bit.
Yeah.
Interesting. So I have a question for you. Because again, you know, Hugo Weaving had no idea who he was prior to watching this. And then he shows up in, you know, as Elrond in Lord of the Rings trilogy. Who do you got? Agent Smith or Elrond? If you had to pick between the two.
Can I pick V?
It's Agent Smith for me, by far.
He's also V, because you know his voice too, and V for Vendetta.
Yeah, but it's just his voice. It's so fantastic. I did not include him because of that.
You know, actually, yeah. Though, V for Vendetta is a great example of voice acting.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
He's able to create an amazing amount of charisma and characterization simply by modulating his voice. And so he's really good in that. I mean, we should actually do that movie. In fact, that might be my pick at some point because I do like it.
I just rewatched it recently. November 5th.
It's great. And it's actually super relevant for today, unfortunately. Yeah.
Dave, you take Agent Smith. Marcus?
Yes.
What am I picking him for? Do I need to save the world from pure evil like Mordor? Or am
Who do you like better?
Agent Smith I like better. Elrond's. He's a little bit soft.
He's a little bit of a fancy boy in that outfit too. With the headband, it's just like, you know, I thought it was a little bit of a goofy look, honestly, the first time I saw him in Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
Right. I'll take Agent Smith too. He's just awesome.
So Joey Pants, we mentioned this earlier, but so he shows up as Cypher and he's just one of those guys that whenever you see him in pretty much anything, you automatically like it. At least that's how it works for me.
Yeah. I love him as an actor and he plays the somewhat Weasley guy so well. His role here, his role as Teddy in Memento, his role as Eddie Moscone in Midnight Run.
Yeah.
He's fantastic. I'll watch anything he's in. He doesn't get the huge roles. He does such a great job with the roles he does get. So it's fantastic. Go Joey.
And he's also in Bound, the Wachowski's first movie.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that in a while.
He's pretty menacing in Bound. That's probably maybe the most menacing I've seen him in a role, because otherwise he's playing, like Marcus said, the kind of that weasel / scoundrel kind of guy or whatever. The Midnight Run thing is great.
He's fantastic in that. Colin, I don't know why you don't like that movie. It's like one of the best. Top 20.
You misunderstand. I like the movie. Wrong! I just don't love it. I think Emily might like Midnight Run more than I do.
Yeah, see, you're wrong.
She has good taste.
Top comedies all time. Top 5 comedy all time. Fantastic.
All right, Colin, that goes through the list of people that I was recommending we talk about on the cast. Who else you got?
Let's go deep. This is the part we cut out.
I just want to mention the other crew, the Nebuchadnezzar, Apoc, Switch, Cypher, Tank, Dozer, and Mouse. And that's all I wanted to say about them. They're like completely forgettable. The lady in red is more memorable than this crew.
They should have had red shirts, right? Or what's the shirt of the people who get killed when they get beamed down to the planet? The
red shirts, yeah. It's literally.
The reason why Apoc and Switch exist in this movie is that
they can be killed.
Joey Pants can have his big scene of slowly executing people around the room. I mean, that's the only reason they exist.
Yep.
Oh, you know, they're sure. Completely forgettable.
When Dozer dies, does anyone care?
All right. Opening questions.
Opening questions. Oh.
Opening questions. Just general things we want to discuss.
Yeah. Okay.
So here's my question. If you had an opportunity to be in the Matrix, and it could be something really cool, and you were given the opportunity to live your life in a pod, but then have this kick-ass existence. My question is, who's going to turn this down? Why do the machines have to conquer and kill anybody to do this? Because I think people would just willingly submit.
I agree.
I disagree. I think people are a lot more difficult than you think. The best thing that they could do for themselves, say, get a shot that will cure you, or at least vaccinate you from, say, a pandemic going on. People will refuse, regardless of it being the best thing that could be for them or not. I think people value freedom a lot more, and they value their free will and choice versus just being zoned out. So I think people would rebel against it, even though that's what they really want. Because if you look at people today and see them looking at their phones, there is a certain level of the Matrix.
I was going to say, I mean, I think we're edging closer to that direction. And I think social media is the cancer that's spreading that I think puts people on the path to wanting to live this existence, because all anybody cares about, right, is how many likes. And by the way, we're doing a podcast. We should probably drop this part. But
smash that like button.
So if you had the ability to configure it like Cypher was suggesting, right, so make me a famous actor, so you could create this amazing reality for yourself, right? So it's imagine you're on the Total Recall trip for your entire life. You're really not going to take that?
It's a tough one. We get into a very philosophical region here, which I think makes it a very interesting movie because you do have these topics. Did you earn it? Are you just given it? Would you find value and, you know, worth in it if you're just given all this stuff and you didn't do what it takes to earn it? I don't think you'd validate it as much. I think you see that today in spoiled little rich kids who just inherit these billions of dollars and then they just are miserable.
The only person who's ever even given this choice is Cypher, right?
Yeah.
And first of all, I think this is a really, really bad idea. How are you going to trust the machine to actually insert you back into the Matrix?
Yeah. They just kill you and they're done with it. Who cares?
Right. You say you don't want to remember anything. Great. We'll put you back in there. We're going to make you a ditch digger.
You're a sewer worker. Yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah. You never remember anything. Come on. Really, Cypher? Really? So I don't buy that at all. Like that, I think that was a really stupid move on his part. But if actually given that real choice... certainly, if you're living in Zion, yeah, I'd want to be inserted back into the Matrix.
Yeah, I think that's the better question is, would you want to be living how they were on Nebuchadnezzar or whatever it's called, or living in the Matrix? The big question I have is, what the hell? The whole premise of these are programs inside your mind that's being controlled. Is a certain level, okay, I just want to accept it and just let it be and not try to think too much about it. Okay, this is a world they built. This is a sci-fi. Let's just accept this is what they're saying is true. But then there's all the aspects of Neo being able to, okay, then I can control the programs. And then like, oh, you're getting in and out of the Matrix by this hardwire line and the phone. There's like a whole bunch of, huh? How does this even work?
So I sort of assume we'd be talking about this a little bit. So I have some questions.
Yeah.
You can use cell phones to call outside of the Matrix, but also require landlines to get out. Why don't the machines just remove the landlines? That was a thought.
None of it's real. That's the other bizarre thing. Every single thing in the Matrix is not a real thing. It's just a program. Are they running inside the people's minds? Are they thinking this?
Like, right. So here's my next question. If you gain a skill in the Matrix, can you do it in real life? So could Trinity, if a helicopter was available in real life, could she fly it after she came out of the Matrix?
I think she might know how to do it, but certainly with the fighting skills.
Yeah.
You might know how to do it, but your body wouldn't let you be able to actually execute it. The right way? No.
Right. So, okay, another question. If the year is 2199, you know, we already had a nuclear apocalypse in the past, where's all the knowledge coming from on how to do these things? Who's the remaining helicopter pilot out there that was able to dictate how you fly a Huey?
Well, maybe there were a lot of libraries with technical manuals.
Just two more quick mythology questions. So the mouth blood, so when they're getting hit in the Matrix,
blood
comes out of their mouth when they're sitting in the chair.
The mind is a powerful thing. The mind makes it real.
The mind is actually compressing your organs as if you're taking a hit from the Matrix.
I think they're just biting their tongues.
Well, they should wear mouth guards when they go into the Matrix.
Well, Jesus Christ, Dave. Maybe you should be the next captain of the Nebuchadnezzar, huh? Huh?
And then I just have one last one. This is the observation, which is, so they're able to cover up Neo's mouth, right? They're able to change the configuration of his mouth. And if they can do that, why can't they just make his leg disappear when he's running from them?
Yeah, there's lots of it. Also, they can convert to any other person. So why didn't they just convert to Neo? If they want him dead.
It doesn't
take away
my enjoyment from this movie at all, but I just thought that there were some of the curiosities when I was looking at it with a more critical eye this time.
It's interesting, as you're trying to build this world where you have these superpowers and you can do this, can do almost anything you want, which is what they're trying to build in the Matrix. In this one, they're trying to add rules. So you want to be able to get hurt, or they can't just take you over. And there's a lot of very weird kind of edge cases to it all. You want ultimate power, but not too much. It's a tough one. I try not to think too much about those. Let it go and just kind of accept it all. And it's okay.
Any of the questions I ask, no negative impact at all to my enjoyment for this movie.
Oh, no, definitely.
They need a landline. All right. He needs to find it. How come there's not more landlines in 1989?
Where are the landlines?
He ran through how many apartments to find one landline?
Here's my last question. This is 20 years. It's more than 20 years since this movie came out. Does this movie hold up against the likes of movies like John Wick and other films nowadays that have all these fighting and everything? How does The Matrix stand up to those movies?
It's a good question. I hadn't seen this movie in quite a while, probably 10 years since the last time I watched it. And I think it held up pretty well. I really enjoyed it. I think the special effects lack in a couple of spots. Not terrible, like some of the stunt scenes and stuff like that, with the helicopter. Weren't quite as good as it could have been. There's a lot of really cool, the bullet time stuff's really cool, and there's a lot of very good effects, but it also looks slightly dated. The Avenger movies and some of the newer superhero movies do a really, really good job with the special effects. Overall, I think the fighting and the story and all that stuff really do work. Special effects are a little bit dated, but not overly so. So I think I would give it a pretty high rating on holding up.
Dave?
I think it held up quite well, honestly. I mean, even better than I was anticipating, because I was thinking that maybe it was going to seem a little threadbare in places, or maybe the effects weren't going to look as good. And I was surprised at how much I thought that everything was still super effective. And some of the moments that you remember kind of being captivated by, like in particular, like the sparring session between Neo and Morpheus. Yeah. You know, I remember watching that like when the first time I saw it in the theater, I'm like, oh, this is really cool and interesting. It's still super fun to watch right now. I mean, I know that maybe there's
Morpheus
some of the...
Morpheus is fighting Neo!
Yeah. That was kind of fun.
That's funny.
The one thing that this movie suffers from is there are so many people that have ripped it off. And so you've seen it so much, it creates a backlog of your familiarity with this. And so when you look at this, it doesn't feel as new or revolutionary, obviously, as when you saw it for the very first time. So that's one thing that maybe is different watching it now. But I think in terms of the quality of the overall film and the fighting, you know, the fighting and the special effects, I think it holds up remarkably well, personally.
So you don't think seeing Trinity do a like a stop in the air, rotate the camera, kick, you see that with Josh Allen any Sunday and it's not a big deal?
Right, yeah.
I think it holds up incredibly well.
I don't know. There's a crispness that's missing.
You mean because of the digital film or whatever?
Yeah, yeah. You would be able to pick out which ones that give you new nothing, and you looked at the two, you know which one's the older one.
Maybe, but I think if you look at the fight sequences, I think they're just as good as anything you're going to see, like in John Wick.
Oh, for sure.
I've seen The Matrix probably 15 or 20 times. It just never gets old.
Wait, I'm curious. When's the last time that you rewatched this movie? Prior to this one?
A couple of years ago.
Marcus?
Yeah, probably about 10 years ago or more. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a long time for me. And I think the sequels actually are why I did not go back and rewatch the original. Although I did try to show it to Dylan. Of course, he didn't buy it.
I just forget about the sequels. I have it on DVD. I was sort of shocked that I didn't have it on Blu-ray. But I used to watch it all the time after it came out. In the early 2000s, I was watching it all the time.
All right. Any other opening questions or questions you guys want to have for general discussion?
Why is the future so green?
Well, I mean, that is interesting. The usage of the color palettes in this movie is very intentional.
Yeah, they do a good job of the differences between the two worlds.
Yeah, it's blue hues in the real world, a green hues in The Matrix, and then it's a white or a yellow in the training sequences.
Yeah.
And they did that purposefully.
The big question I have also is, how does the Oracle know anything? Who the hell is she? What does she know? Where's she getting her knowledge?
Based on the mythology, she must know everything because it's all happened basically the same way over and over and over again.
I suppose. And that's from the old the sequels?
Yeah, that's from the sequels.
Yeah.
This is why I like the original so much, is that there's a lot of questions, right?
Yeah.
So many questions of, well, how does she know that? Okay, they're inside a computer program. What's the outside world like? All of these questions, and in the sequels, they answer a lot of them. And it's just the answers that I'm not really satisfied with.
I think it's better having them as questions than answered.
Agreed. Which is why I said I would have been so happy if there were never any sequels to this movie.
Well, actually, no, since we're here, real quick, what's your take on the sequel that's coming up? What's your guess on the plot or the approach? Do you guys have any idea?
Well, from the trailer, it looks a lot like The Force Awakens in that it seems like it's going to be like a rehash of The Matrix.
That's all fan service.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they're going to make Trinity the one somehow, or she's going to become the one, or that kind of thing.
Honestly,
it seems like they're going in that direction.
I don't even care.
Yeah, I'll watch it.
I don't need another sequel, but I'm looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, Keanu Reeves in the last, say, I don't know, 10 years or something, when the first John Wick came out. Since that, you can put him in anything and he's rocking it.
All right, well, for The Matrix, who would like to give us a plot summary?
Oh, I actually have one.
Go for it.
All right. It's not very good, though. but I'll do it anyway. I'll do it anyway.
Go for it.
When a beautiful stranger leads computer hacker Neo to a forbidding underworld, he discovers the shocking truth. The life he knows is the elaborate deception of an evil cyber intelligence. I don't think that's a great plot summary.
It's not. I do love the open, because before you realize what the Matrix is, it's a very, very surreal what's going on. Like just trying to figure out the puzzle of, okay, who's this? Who's a Neo guy? He's going to the club. Then he wakes up in his bed again. He's getting arrested. That opening sequence, especially with the start of, with Trinity being like, not killed by the truck or whatever. It really has you guessing on what's going on in the movie. So I think it's fantastic. That whole open is so great.
That's why I said, I think this is one of the most awesome and surprising movie openings ever, because you're super confused as to what's going on, who's a good guy, who's a bad guy.
Who has powers? What powers do you have?
Yeah.
And then at the end of that scene, and we can dive into that scene itself a little bit more, Trinity running into a phone booth, picking up the phone. Immediately, the booth is just demolished by a dump truck, and yet she's nowhere to be seen.
Yep.
And then you got these three federal agent-looking guys.
She got out. It doesn't matter. The informant is real.
Yes. We have the name of their next target.
The name is Neo.
We'll need a search running.
It has already begun.
It's so cryptic. It's like, what the hell's going on here? You're just instantly taken in, right?
Yeah. Nolan did Memento, right?
Yeah.
It reminds me of Memento, because like in Memento, you just start off completely. It's the opening scene, like he's running from someone. Like, I haven't seen Memento in so long. What is going on? And you get some of that in The Matrix, right? It's just this like, what?
You know, I timed it because you don't figure out what The Matrix is until 35 minutes into the movie.
I would say that first 35 minutes is the best part too.
I sort of agree because I have watched it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So I'd say I'd probably watch this movie about 50 times, at least the opening.
The first 35, and then when they go in to extract Morpheus, I mean, that can be beat.
That scene is pretty amazing. But this scene, because you're seeing Trinity in the heart of the city motel, you don't know what's going on, right? The cops are there. They're going to bring her up. They're totally underestimating her. And yet these three agents show up. No, your men are already dead. What the?
The other thing I like about this too is it establishes a little bit of the photography that you're going to see. You see the shot of the, you know, where it's part of her face and you see the officers behind her. There's a lot of emphasis on how light is being used, the flashlights in the room and all that, because it's you know, that's being used also when she goes up and runs around the corner of the wall. And then, of course, you have the, I think it's called the eagle kick or something like that. There's a term for it where she does it and then it freezes her. And first time you saw that, you're like, what is this?
Yeah, so, that was so cool.
Exactly. Your mind is sort of blown right off the bat because you've never seen this stuff before.
Yeah.
One thing that I think is pretty interesting, when she runs across the rooftops, they were using a set from Dark City, which was directed by Alex Proyas. He also directed The Crow.
Hmm.
When you see her making that run, it's super similar to Brandon Lee's post-Crow transformation. It's like, I mean, there's a lot of similarities there. So I wonder if they took some inspiration.
Apparently, when they wrote this back in the early 90s, they had wanted Brandon Lee to play Neo.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
But then he died in, what, 94?
That would have been really good. That would have been really interesting. I haven't seen The Crow in a long time.
After that crazy opening, Neo's asleep in front of his computer. There are some guys that show up and they're asking for something. So this was my question. There's a weird group of, you know, partiers, and they come and they knock on Neo's door and they ask him, hey, do you got it? And for $2,000, he gives him a disc. I did a freeze frame on it to try and see what it says, and I think it said disc 9567 on it. That's what it was. So here's my question. What's on the disc?
That was my question. I really want to know.
I assume it's a hacking program, right? Of some kind? It has to be, right?
I don't know.
It's interesting because, like, is it tied to the Matrix? Because he didn't know about it at all, so he can't be, right?
Now he's been searching, right?
Yeah. He knows there's something more out there, but he doesn't know what it is.
He knows there's this thing called the Matrix, and it's like searching for his own identity and where he fits in the world. Why does he feel so out of place? And what is the Matrix?
Some way to hack into a computer somehow or something.
So this guy's name is Choi. And by the way, I always thought his name was Troy. Thank God for captions.
he can be unrelated to your USC Trojans.
Well, it just always sounded like Troy, but it's apparently Choi. And the reason I know this is because of the captions. And then I read that, you know, the girl's name is De Jour.
It's the girl of the day.
If you put them together, right. But if you put it together as Choi De Jour, it's actually referring to the French phrase choix du jour. It's choice of the day. That's what it actually literally translates to. And this movie is full of choices.
So that's interesting because that's his, right? He has to follow the white rabbit.
Yeah, that's his first choice is, you know, stay at home or follow them. I'd never even put that together. And it was only through doing some research on this that I even knew that.
See, the 48th time you watched it with closed caption, I know. You finally got it.
I always thought it was like something with drugs because when he got his hands onto that disc.
That's what it really felt like.
He was just like, oh, thank you, dude. Like, you're a lifesaver. Like, But how could it be?
Real DMC community, send us a message at feedback@realdmc.com. Let us know. What is on that disc?
It's a new Doom Wad he's working on.
Maybe. Maybe it was.
I made this cool Old West Doom Wad. You should check it out.
$2,000, man. That's expensive. Neo is invited out to a club. And this is another question I had, which is, what kind of club is this exactly? Where did they invite Neo? Because I'm pretty sure this is like a BDSM club.
Yes, BDSM.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, hey, Neo, we don't know you that well, but you want to come out to a BDSM club?
Yeah. Yeah, why not? Why not?
All right. Yeah. And I do like while he's there, by the way, when Trinity comes up to him, because there's a certain forwardness / creepiness to her leaning in and start talking a little quietly and doing a little ASMR. What is the Matrix? Attractive woman, so maybe he's just going to roll with it. But I thought that the way that she approached him was kind of funny.
Interesting. I always just wondered, how could she be whispering in a club with blaring music?
That's a good point. Hey, Neo, you have to ask yourself, what is the Matrix?
I thought you were a guy. Most guys do.
What handkerchief do you think Neo had in his pocket?
I think he had a yellow hanky.
Oh, jeez. Okay. Sorry. Took me a while. Please see our cruising podcast for more information on that one.
Well, also Neo like says, oh, you're the one who hacked the IRS database or whatever. So there's this lore to her also.
Right. You get the sense that everybody who's been able to at least question or identify the reality of the Matrix is because they have hacking skills. From here, you go to, there's the office. He wakes up late. He runs into his cubicle. A FedEx package arrives that has the blue and the yellow on it, and there's a phone inside. I like the phones in this movie. That's a big phone that he gets, right?
Oh, yeah. I love that phone.
It's a pretty thick, big mobile phone, so I think that's pretty funny. But what I really like about this scene is, so Morpheus is on there, and he's basically telling Neo that he needs to get out right now and needs to follow his instructions. But what I really like is, it's an urgent scene. He's got seconds to move. So the way Morpheus is delivering the information is, Neo, you really need to get moving. It's like, hey, Morpheus, how about talk a little faster, right? Because every second counts here.
No, wait, Morpheus is super cool, man. He's not going to be doing that. By the way, there's another choice for Thomas A. Anderson. His boss, he's getting his ass reamed by his boss, and he gives him a choice of being part of the team or finding himself another job. A lot of choices in this movie.
Look, you either come here and you start doing crappy low-level programming, or you go become the savior of the universe. The choice is yours, dude. Come on, make a decision.
I had a question about this scene. When was the last time you saw any programmer wearing a suit and tie to work?
Yeah, he's in New York, so it's possible. 99?
It's not even New York.
Wasn't it New York?
No.
Where are they supposed to be?
I think it's actually Capital City. Yeah, and that's only because you see it if you really look.
I thought it was New York. The names seem like New York. Subway.
Street names are like Chicago. There are some skyscrapers in San Francisco. You know, they shot this in Sydney, in Australia. That city is Sydney that you see. I loved it because I was very unfamiliar with the look of Sydney. It seemed like it could be this nondescript city.
A manufactured city?
There were no landmarks like you'd see in New York.
Empire State Building or something.
Yeah. That was the reason that why they were able to shoot this for the $60 million budget. It was because they did Australia. They said if they'd filmed it in the U.S., it would have been like about $180 million.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I really enjoyed seeing his cubicle because I definitely, in 1999, was working a cubicle that looked exactly like that.
I will note that his cubicle had no personalization whatsoever.
It was very low-key.
It was very sterile. One thing I like about the scene, too, is they use this as an opportunity to do just a little bit of exposition on the agent characters, because you have that moment where the two agents come together and then they're spreading out to go look for him and they turn opposite directions and they move away.
Yeah, precise.
Synchronous kind of movement. That kind of just gives you a sense that there's something robotic, you know, or systematic about these guys. So I like that moment. So Agent Smith grabs him because he decides not to jump out the window or walk along the ledge like Morpheus is asking him to do. Another choice there, Colin, by the way. It goes back to him in the interrogation room. And this has another fun moment, the big one being, you know, Agent Smith is reading out all the shit that he's done. And then he's like, and then he does the famous line.
We're willing to wipe the slate clean, give you a fresh start. All that we're asking in return is your cooperation in bringing a known terrorist to justice.
Yeah. Wow, that sounds like a really good deal. But I think I got a better one. How about I give you the finger, and you give me my phone call?
It's a classic. I laugh every time, not just the dialogue, but he says, how about I give you the finger? And then there's a delay, and you just see him giving the middle finger. It's just like you see the finger. It is wonderfully directed, I have to say. This is one of my favorite scenes because this is where you really get introduced to Agent Smith. I cannot keep my eyes off him. And Hugo Weaving is so good in all of his speeches. It's just a really, really well-written and good scene and really well-performed.
I actually like Hugo Weaving's finger movements in that scene, right? The way that he actually is touching the folder and pushing it aside when he says, right. Well, wipe the slate clean. He did a really good job with the physicality of creating this automaton. Small movements are actually very captivating in this movie, the way he does them. They insert a bug into Neo. And just one note there, which is anything crawling through my belly button, that just kind of freaks me out. So that I find that to be a little gross, honestly.
Effective.
Yeah. Just the thought of something either going into or, God forbid, out of your belly button.
Oh. Right.
Oh.
Yeah, the extraction.
The extraction was disgusting.
So Neo is basically summoned to meet with Morpheus. And this is where they do have him in the car. One other observation is that there's an awful lot of rain coming down. It's raining really hard, how much water's coming off that bridge, and you see that in several places. So I'm not sure if the computer overlords are getting the weather quite correct, but they pull the bug out of his system. And when the bug shoots out, the fact that it's metallic, but it's got little pieces of flesh on it, it's just disgusting.
Oh, no, I know.
The way that it like pops out, like, it's just gross. Yeah,
it's gross. How come that didn't leave a mark? It's a pretty big bug. He needs some stitches.
Well, he did get his mouth melted closed earlier. Right. So.
Yeah.
I like how the movie drops little hints here and there that you have no idea what they're talking about until after you understand what the Matrix is. When Switch calls him Copper Top, he's not a redhead, but it's actually that he's a battery, like a Duracell battery. There's stuff like that you don't catch the first time around, and then you watch it a second time. Oh.
When he meets Morpheus, Morpheus is somehow standing cool.
Is it really comfortable to hold your forearms behind your back?
There's something about the pose that's it's pretty effective.
It seems very monk-like.
Yeah, that's a good call,
actually.
Very
zen. There's a lot of zen attributes in this.
You know, when he sits down, this is where there's a repeated photography approach. There's tons of reflected images in this. So he sits down and you're seeing, you know, the red pill, blue pill thing. Obviously, Neo decides to go for it and learn the truth. My question is, if after Neo takes that pill, he turns around and he sees the mirror is melting and he sees the mirror like grabbing on his hand and all that. Don't you think he's going to be yelling something like, what the fuck did you dose me with? Or something like that. Like, don't you think he'd be just like flipping out at that moment? Because he handles it pretty calmly. I'm impressed with his calmness as he's slowly getting transformed there.
It's because he is the one.
I love the dialogue with, you know, Morpheus trying to explain what the Matrix is without being able to tell him.
You are a slave, Neo. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage, born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind. Unfortunately, no one can be told what the Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself.
And you're still going, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, I understand that, but I still can't imagine what it is. And it's only after he explains it to him when they pull him out. Oh, now it all makes sense.
Right.
It's really well done. It's well written.
No, I totally agree. The revelation is whoa. With all the bodies, and you just see rows and rows and rows and rows. But the big question I have is, what is this blue pill? Or the red pill is what he takes. So they say it's a trace program so they can find him. But then how are they connected to him? Are they in the shared world? Where are these programs? How are they giving this program that's running inside of him a program to run? And you take this by a pill? I don't know.
Anyway, the pill's just a symbolic thing, I think.
No, but they say it's a trace program so they can find his body in the racks, right?
So ultimately, yeah. I think that's really probably all that it is. All the stuff with the mirror melting and crawling up his arm and down his throat, that's just for show. Ultimately, they just need to know which body is his, right? In the stacks.
I think he's just having a hallucination at that point or tripping out, yeah.
Yeah, he's coming to grips with this change. You know, he's waking up to...
Right, he's waking up. The Matrix is melting.
He's coming out of the Matrix, yeah.
It's melting. It's dissolving. The Matrix is dissolving around him.
Right. Well, and he wakes up in effectively a birth canal, right? You know, because he has the shaved head, he's got the viscera around him, umbilical cords.
Did he really shave his head?
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah.
And he lost 15 pounds of the muscle he'd gained to film that scene in the pod.
He looks so different. Mike, is that really Keanu? Can he barely even tell it's him?
Keanu with alopecia.
When one great thing about this, and this is, I think, a strength of this movie, is the creature design of the machines. When he wakes up and he's sitting there, and then you have the, I don't know what those things would be, like the attendants, show up, and it's very predatory looking.
Insect-like.
Yeah.
They're creepy because they're a little spider-like.
Right.
You know, they have these little tiny hands on the thorax. And
red eyes.
The red eyes, and then they're metal. They can do a lot of damage to you.
Right.
Just grab you by the neck and unplug you. Ugh.
Don't you think that the design of those are, it's super effective?
Absolutely.
When the sentinels are attacking at the end, it's communicating menace because of the design of the creatures, right?
Yeah, I also think the effects with the plugs in the head and the arms and all that were really well done. It looks like he was all like completely hooked up as a battery in this tube.
All that stuff is so inventive.
Yeah, it's really cool.
So here's the question, though. Why, if you wake up, do you have to get flushed? Where are you supposed to get flushed to?
Then they just dump them.
I don't think you're supposed to wake up. I think if you die, maybe they're flushing the body out, making room for a new.
Yeah, because they're supposed to liquefy. They liquefy the dead and feed you back to the living.
They mentioned that at one point, so I was asking that in terms of where he ends up, right? Because they basically send him down a water slide, and then he goes shooting out the side, and they pick him up.
So they send him to raging waters?
They do, actually.
But the Nebuchadnezzar picks him up, so that's a big difference.
Right.
He would have gone down to some like smelting factory and would have been turned into a food.
And one thing I also really liked here is, so once they get him on board the ship, you know, they go through a sequence where they have to rehab his muscles.
Yeah.
I really do like the fact that they pay attention to, okay, what would it be like if your body had been laying there unused for all these years, and they have to try to build his muscles. Like he says, he, you know, opens his eyes and, why do my eyes hurt? It's because you've never actually used them before. Like,
yeah, that's good writing.
That attention to detail is really, I really appreciate that from a story perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After Neo is, you know, when he's awake and he's being informed and Morpheus is trying to explain to him what's going on, I love that the fact that the way Morpheus does it is really just to scare the shit out of him. So he brings him down, he shows him the old TV, shows him the apocalyptic landscape. There's thunderclaps going off. They have control of all this, right? Somebody decided, let's make this scary.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
Is this kind of like a scared straight into the real world program for Neo? Is that what this is? Is it designed to shock specifically, you think?
I don't think that he wants to sugarcoat it.
Yeah.
So, well, he certainly doesn't sugarcoat it, but he definitely embellishes. He makes it as scary as possible, right?
Well, I think he's trying to show the severity of the situation. You're not in the Matrix anymore, kiddo.
Maybe provoke a response. You know, if you're like, oh my God, get me out of here, get me out of here. I want to go back. Blue pill, blue pill. Oh shit, he's not the one.
Maybe some sort of test. I guess that's a good thought.
Anyway, I thought the whole idea of jacking into the construct and using it to give a bit of a history lesson about how we got here and what the Matrix is, I thought this was really great, and I really enjoy this scene a lot.
It also gives you an opportunity from the photography to see different colors being used. The training sequences are a little different than the actual Matrix, so shows you that it's different. I like the photography. The color palette, I think, is well used throughout the film. Mm-hmm. So then you get to the trainings. He sits in the chair and he absorbs 10 hours worth of martial arts training.
Yeah.
And then, of course, has the famous line.
I know Kung Fu.
Show me.
An amazing piece of dialogue delivered perfectly by Keanu.
I know, right? It's sort of like he's a kid in a candy store a little bit.
Well, even the setup for that where Tink's like, oh, okay, you're gonna learn jujitsu? He's like, oh, how about some more? Hell yes.
Hell yes.
Oh, yeah. Whole thing. He's like, oh, we're going on 10 hours. You know, like, this guy's he's a champ.
But then also Morpheus' response is fantastic. He's like, show me. The training sequence overall is really, really solid. One of the best scenes.
The other thing that I love about this sequence is you get a chance to see the different fighting styles. So Neo is fighting differently than Morpheus. And there are just a couple of moments like where Morpheus moves his feet really quick.
I love that shot.
When they're re-engaging, that's just so much fun to watch. It's just I don't know what it is about that, but it's captivating.
That's why, see, I'll take this scene over John Wick any day.
Yeah.
John Wick is very impressive with all the fighting moves and everything. And this, I don't know, it's just so creative and joyful. I don't know.
It is kind of joyful and it sort of sparkles. The energy is just fantastic. Yeah, yeah. And yeah, even the set design or the dojo that they create out of the construct is, it looks fantastic.
Yeah, I think part of the fun is the audience too, right? All the people on the crew of the ship
are right,
like excited for it, and they come and they're watching, and they're like, it's part of the fun of the whole training set.
Yeah, and you got Morpheus is just, again, being Morpheus, he's exuding cool. And then Neo looks like he hit the lottery, and he's just pulling out everything he's just learned and having so much fun while fighting and maybe getting his ass kicked in the beginning, but he's just having such an amazing time. It's sort of like, you know, when you wake up from a dream and you, like a really great dream when you were flying or doing something amazing. It's got to be that feeling that he has.
I think it's more than a feeling.
Oh, Boston. Love it. Love that song. Love that song.
We did talk about the jump scene. I'm trying to remember if they had a teaser trailer that might have just had the jump in it versus the full Matrix trailer. I'll have to go back and look. It's pretty fun to see, right? It's exciting. You're like, what is this? How can these people do this? And that was what I recall from seeing it in the trailer at one point.
Well, and that's what I was referring to when I think I'd seen that particular thing from one of the trailers. I don't know. Maybe I should have just been more excited because after I watched the movie, obviously I was super excited. But yeah. I don't know. Maybe I just thought it was kind of lame and him saying, well, wow, when you watch it in the movie, in the context, especially after this scene, it's more like, wow, great stuff.
That is demonstrating some serious superpowers for Morpheus. So are they giving him greater abilities in this construct than in the actual Matrix? Because nobody's jumping like that when they're running from the agents, for example.
Yeah, that's part of the problem I have with the mythology that comes and goes when it's convenient for them to get caught or when it's convenient for them to have like superpowers.
You know, I hadn't thought about that, but that's a good point because they're not in the Matrix. This is the construct. Right. And this is actually a test. And yeah, they put everyone through this test. But yeah, in the Matrix, I mean, you do have some of these powers, but maybe not to that extent. Certainly, Trinity was able to jump from rooftop to rooftop, but is anyone really doing that kind of jump? I don't think so.
So I guess they have flexed the rules in the construct is what it comes down to.
Morpheus had a power-up.
To some degree, it's all within the mind, right? Maybe when he's in the training module, he knows it's a training module, so he's able to like free his mind a little bit more so he can do that jump. But when he's in the Matrix, it's like the Matrix is strong enough reality of some sort to fuck with his mind enough that he can't get past that.
I think ultimately it's just designed to make you free your mind of the reality and what you can or can't do in reality.
You need to clear your mind of spoons.
Once you can do that, then you're able to actually do a jump like that. And that means that you're able to do stuff in the Matrix because now you
can bend reality a little bit.
Not to that extent that's in the test, but
right.
But now you can actually do crazy shit.
So Neo runs into Cypher. Cypher is in the middle of, you know, he has all these screens up and turns a bunch of them off when Neo walks in.
Watching porn. He's watching the Matrix porn.
Neo doesn't know what the hell is on these screens at this point, probably, right?
Yeah.
Don't you think that that's more of a suspicious move on Cypher's part than just kind of acting normal and just kind of saying, hey, Neo, what's up?
Wait a minute. So does anyone know what's going on there? Like, they use this throughout the sequels. They're watching the raw code. And yet it seems like they can tell, like, what's happening.
Right.
That happens all throughout this one, too. They know everything in the training program that's happening by looking at those screens.
But it seems like bullshit to me. Like, yeah, I totally see that. Agree. Why can they see that?
Yeah, they know how to decode it. I think they do give a little bit of lip service to that. You can just stare at this. You can decode it now or something.
Whatever.
All the operators, all they see is that Matrix.
Yeah.
So when Tank's doing it, they don't know what's actually going on.
You know, I was never able to get one of those dot pictures to work for me. I could never do it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Stare at this and see a boat after a while. I never saw the boat. I just saw a bunch of dots. I really tried because I wanted to make it happen. So there's no way I'm going to ever be able to see the Matrix.
You know, that's just a psychology test. It's just to see if you can get other people to say that, you know, oh, yeah, I see it. You don't see it?
You guys ready to do Mallrats?
Yeah, totally.
The other thing about that Cypher interaction, so he does offer him a drink, some stuff they're distilling, and that I'm sure is, you know, really bad for you. I don't know how much he gives Neo, but if you've never had alcohol before, I'd imagine that's probably going to hit his system pretty hard. If he has the equivalent of like 3 shots of 90 proof, whatever.
Especially if all you're eating is gruel.
Neo's going to have his first hangover. Let's see what that's like.
He's going to pop.
Cypher when he goes into the Matrix and he's negotiating with Agent Smith. Cypher says he wants to be an actor or wealthy, and then of course they say, anything you want, Mr. Reagan. So there you go.
Yeah, that's a good one.
When they enter the Matrix for the first time, right, so this is where Neo goes in, I do love the opening shot moment where, you know, the music's pounding. They have the spinning shot where they're showing the phone, and then it kind of just, the camera pans around and it stops, and they're all standing perfectly still in their outfits.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's a cool visual, but it's also just sort of a funny moment, because why would they enter the Matrix and then everybody would just stand there perfectly still with each other for 45 seconds or whatever?
I don't think that's what was going on. It was that it was the process of inserting, and it was no one's there. Boom, they're there.
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
That's what I take it to be.
Oh, I thought it was just everybody was having kind of their Blue Steel moment where they wanted to hit the camera with their best gaze.
That's my other question is, I get if you got some BDSM fantasy stuff and you're like, oh, I think I'm going to wear some black latex. That's going to be my move in the Matrix. But why is everyone dressing like that?
You want a jeans and a t-shirt guy?
Like there's one, yeah, basically.
Pair of shorts and a hoodie. That's how I'd show up in the Matrix.
It's the residual self-image, or it's like the mental projection of your digital self. When Neo is in the construct, he has a shaved head in real life, but he's still got it. You know, he's got his full head of hair back. He looked like, I think he was wearing basically jeans and a t-shirt in that scene. But then he goes into the Matrix, and now he's like super fly. I'm just wondering, like, why is it that they all look like that? I mean, I like it. It's really cool. I mean, everyone's super cool looking, very sleek, ultra stylized. You know, you got all these black leather trench coats, latex bodysuits, micro sunglasses, like black combat boots. It's really a cool look. They spent a lot of effort on it, but the whole crew looks that way. And I sort of get that because it's probably like Morpheus is the trendsetter. And so they all follow his lead. And so they all look like a crew, you know, they're sort of uniform, but.
Dude, you're not coming into the Matrix with my crew. I'll tell you that right now. You'll be wearing your like preppy shirt and like khakis.
But
khaki pants.
Get this guy out of here.
But this is where the sequels lost me, because in the Matrix Reloaded, now you start seeing other crews and they're all meeting up in the Matrix and they all dress this way.
Right. You want it more like the Warriors. You got the baseball crew.
Yeah, the baseball Furies, and yep. You know, not necessarily. But this is where I started thinking, like Dave, you said, it was all up its own ass. You know,
maybe I remembered it correctly. I will go back and check them out.
Yeah.
Cypher drops the phone. I guess what he's doing is he's marking the location they're going to go back to. They take Neo when he goes to meet the Oracle. By the way, so something I did find out that was interesting is, there was a deleted line of dialogue, apparently a deleted scene, where Cypher is talking to Neo, and Cypher says that Neo is the 23rd one that Morpheus has brought out of the Matrix, and the previous 22 have all died fighting agents. So that's never really referenced, but the idea that Morpheus keeps trying to find these people, hey, you might be the one, and then they get slaughtered. He's on number 23, I guess, with Neo.
And maybe that's because in the first round of Neo's, the little training program, you know, wasn't as scary, you know, so they had to up the quotient on that.
It was just sitting on a park bench the first time around. They're like, oh, this isn't so bad. Yeah.
Agent? Okay. Oh, he's like, hi, Mr. Agent. Oh, we lost another one.
So Neo goes to see the Oracle. It was interesting that there were a bunch of other kids or people that were being evaluated. Was it one evaluation day? Was that what was going on? Like everybody was packed in there all at once? Or was the Oracle just seeing a steady stream of these people?
I thought she ran a daycare.
Right. I think she's seeing a steady stream of candidates.
But why is everyone looking to be the one?
I think she's on the right track, though, because you got kids juggling blocks in the air. not juggling, but actually
floating
blocks in the air. Yet you got little Buddhas bending spoons. I mean, these are pretty good candidates.
There is no spoon.
Maybe one thing I don't understand is, why would the machines let the Oracle remain?
Well, the Oracle is actually a computer program.
I guess with the second one, they're trying to reference that the Oracle plays a role in repeating the cycle, right? That's what it is. You know, it doesn't matter.
I know. Yeah. Just like
that's one of the big questions, but you can just leave it as the wise person who knows the truth.
The Oracle, for me, serves a distinct purpose in this movie. She knows the future. She keeps, you're referencing it in her conversation with Neo. You know, she knows things about him. I really like when she says, you're cuter than I thought. I can see why she likes you. Who? Not too bright, though. She says, don't worry about the vase. And he's like, what vase? And then he knocks over the vase. She tells him that he's not the one. But that just serves a purpose. And so you're thinking like, oh, he's not the one. And yet she knows the future. So if she knows the future, then she knows he's not the one.
What is the purpose, though, of telling him that he's not the one?
So he'll go back in and get Morpheus?
Well, yes, but I think it's also more for the audience. Now, we're unsure. Is he actually the one? And when you put that doubt in the audience's mind, it makes the payoff oh so sweeter.
Regardless of how she knows everything, I like the Oracle's prophecies. Are they true? Are they not true? Whatever she says going to happen or not? It adds another level of curiosity to everything going on.
So Gloria Foster is the actor that plays the Oracle. You know, you expect previous Oracles, you're going to go someplace and it's this transformative event or, you know, who knows what's going on. And nope, it's just this nice lady just baking some cookies in the kitchen. So
it's not a hot redhead who's gyrating orgasms and like she's underwater.
It is not the Oracle from 300, no.
Honestly, I will take this Oracle any day because I think Gloria Foster is amazing in this role. Such an amazing voice. Every line that comes out of her mouth is just fantastic. I particularly love it when she says,
here, take a cookie. I promise by the time you're done eating it, you'll feel right as rain.
It's a bit ASMR-like, I swear to God. I just want to melt when I like listen to her voice.
By the way, so when they get back from the Oracle, and there's one thing that I noticed that I had not seen before, which is they get inside the building and Morpheus says, they can track your phone, and he pulls a phone out of his pocket. And you see Cypher put his hand in his pocket and come out with nothing. Right, his phone's gone. Wouldn't that also be a little bit of a giveaway that maybe something's not up? But anyways, they're just kind of off to the races.
Oh, maybe that explains it.
Why, how the agents got to that building?
No, the agents go to the building, they have this big battle, and then they're trying to find an exit. Cypher calls in from a landline, from a payphone, and there's some car accident there. What is the significance? They seem a little dubious, like they're wondering what he's doing there.
Yeah, why is he with everyone else?
Again, I don't know about this car accident that's right there, but the fact that he's dialing in on a payphone instead of a cell phone
makes me think that maybe he lost his phone. Is that the revelation you're experiencing?
Yeah. Well, I knew he had lost his, that he had left his phone there.
But the other people should have known that.
But it still doesn't answer the question about why is there this car accident there? I don't know.
They were filming the scene. There's a car accident. They're like, fuck it. Let's just go with it.
it's just odd.
Did it take too long for them to clear out?
They're inside the building. Again, the agents have had the ability to physically reconfigure the building, right? So they changed all the windows to bricked up walls. Or why can't they do it for other things? You know, when they're flying the helicopter, they can turn it into a potato or something like that. But moving past that, I guess the other thing that I think is interesting about this scene is Morpheus goes to sacrifice himself so that Neo can get away. And I think that Morpheus bathroom fight scene, it seems like it's staged pretty poorly. Morpheus doesn't look like he's fighting very effectively at all. And so I'm kind of wondering if you think that, did they make that fight seem bad on purpose? Or what was the thought of dumbing down Morpheus's fighting ability?
Well, do you mean because he's getting his ass kicked?
Well, he's getting his ass kicked, but you know, even initially when he does, you know, the initial attack and he jumps through, it seems clumsy. So he's very elegant when he's in the dojo, but he's far less so here. So I just thought that was an interesting decision.
Yeah, I think it's just they want to show off the strength of Agent Smith. And like, Morpheus is such a badass, but they've talked about how powerful the agents are previous. But this was the first real chance to show off. Even Morpheus, almighty Morpheus, will get his ass kicked.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. You know, what Neo can do versus Morpheus, that makes sense.
Yeah.
When Cypher gets back to the real world, he does use a Ghostbusters proton pack to attack Dozer and Tank. I mean, the effects are obviously a lot better looking, but the type of effect that comes out of it is very similar to a proton pack, just a different color.
That was one of those, like, they'd do that better now.
Cypher kills Apoc and Switch. Not a single person viewing this movie is probably like, oh man, they killed Twitch.
Switch.
I felt bad for Mouse in the first one.
I didn't feel too bad for Mouse.
No?
Mouse was clearly in over his head. He like picks up the two up the biggest two guns and in both arms is just like blasting away, and he's done in within like 5 seconds.
Yeah, it looks like he's gonna fall down if he shot both those guns at the same time. They just knock him over.
By the way, you are right. It is Switch. And did you know that character was originally supposed to be transgender. They were going to be male in one reality and female in the other.
Yeah, which I thought was interesting.
I don't know why they did or did not choose to...
The studio did it?
Yeah. Cowards.
I mean, I could see where maybe they were just like...
It'd be confusing.
Okay, we get it, but I think people are going to be confused.
It's such a minor character.
It is a minor character. Interesting idea, though.
Morpheus, while he's being held hostage, you have a nice moment where... This is where Hugo Weaving gets to let a little bit of his frustration come to the surface. The way that he rubs Lawrence Fishburne's head, you know, sticks his fingers up his nose, it's a very bizarre kind of physical interaction, and it's definitely unsettling. I'm not sure what it is about that, but there's something about that scene that just kind of creeps me out a bit.
Oh, I totally love that. It's the smell. It's everywhere.
Entire crops were lost. I love the cadence of his voice.
No, seriously, like this is what I'm talking about. Like he has a few like really great speeches, and this is one of them. So good. Speaking of great quotes, here's a bad quote. It's no surprise it comes from Tank. Neo, this is loco. About Neo's idea to go back in and save Morpheus. Neo, this is loco. It's like awful. I'm sorry.
You don't like Tank, I guess, huh?
I don't really like Tank.
Okay.
Tank's got one good scene, and that's about it.
They have to make a decision if they're going to kill Morpheus or not. And they mention that the reason why they have to do that is because every ship commander is given codes to the Zion mainframe. That's what you get in terms of the MacGuffin around, you know, like what this piece of information is. You know, not what the mainframe is, but I do have to question the strategic significance of giving every ship commander your code to the big mainframe. Isn't that a little dangerous? Kind of, I guess, depends what you can do with the codes and what the mainframe does. So there are some unanswered questions here, but... They have to kill him for a reason that is truthfully not explained. The significance of that reason is not explained to the audience in any way whatsoever.
I think it's fine. Like you said, it's a MacGuffin. He has the codes. They need the codes to yeah. destroy Zion. Okay.
It's one of those things you just accept.
Yes.
Like what are the mainframes powering? Is it powering Zion itself? Is it powering these ships? Is it powering their own simulation? I don't know.
Nobody knows.
Well, if you get the codes to the mainframe, then you can access the mainframe. And there's a big red button that says destroy Zion, and you get to push that button.
It's kind of like break glass in case of meteor. So.
Exactly.
Please see our Starship Troopers podcast. Neo says he's going in to rescue Morpheus, and I love how she spins on him and that she's going in too, and he tries to stop her. She kicks his ass a little bit.
What are you doing?
Going with you.
No, you're not.
No? Let me tell you what I believe. I believe Morpheus means more to me than he does to you. I believe if you are really serious about saving him, you are going to need my help. And since I am the ranking officer on this ship, if you don't like it, I believe you can go to hell. Because you aren't going anywhere else. Tank, load us up.
For Carrie Ann Moss, it's a really nice acting moment. I like it. She delivers it with a lot of authority, and it's earned authority at that point. And then going into the construct again, another great... moment that has been aped 1,000 times on every commercial, right, where they load up the guns. And so when you see the guns come sliding in, it's just tons of fun. And of course, it has the line of dialogue that is just another iconic line of dialogue.
Okay, so what do you need? Besides a miracle. Guns. Lots of guns.
When you start seeing commercials where you're in a white void and then all of a sudden a huge rack of automobiles.
Carmack. Comes in.
Yeah, it's just like, kill me now.
That's been done to death for sure. I mean, That's something that has been overused since The Matrix.
It was great at the time. I think really, really.
It was fun.
Cool stuff.
But it's also, they're loading up. You always love to see the crew getting outfitted and then going in.
By the way, how many guns did Neo take in with him when they showed up in the lobby?
I'm thinking the answer might be all of them.
A lot.
He probably had the equivalent of maybe 12 guns on him, I would think.
Yeah. I do love for the lobby assault. And he like sets off the metal detector and he opens his overcoat and he's literally strapped to the gills. And the guard just says, holy shit. And then all hell breaks loose.
This is one of the greatest action scenes ever in any movie. You know, obviously the wire effects were tons of fun. The way that it's shot where they used all the squibs to put all the material in the air... Bullets going everywhere. It does make me wonder why the bolts are hitting all the pillars, never hitting them, of course. They're able to dodge the bullets. That whole attack sequence is just fantastic. And it's iconic. It's the combination of the music, obviously the wire effects, and then it's just the coolness of doing it all in a large trench coat with some sunglasses on. Yeah. Because why do you need sunglasses when you're attacking a lobby? Or like, does the sunglasses help? Do they provide focus? I'm just wondering. That's my question.
Because when you're cool, the sun shines on you 24 hours a day.
24 hours a day.
All the things you mentioned make this such a special scene and stunt sequence. Killing guys while doing cartwheels. That is just balls out fantastic.
He had to pick up again. I did see the cartwheel at one point. I'm like, ooh, that's not a great look. But he did like pick up a gun off the ground.
Well, he did it so that he could pick up a gun off the ground and start firing. Really great. You start seeing shell casings falling in slow-mo.
Yeah, all the like cement and all the debris in the air. All of it just then. It's fantastic scene.
You know, one thing that's pretty amazing too is that section of the pillar that falls off at the end. That was unplanned.
Oh, funny.
It's so perfect. It's like,
it's so perfect.
It's a little tiny bit of comedy, which is, I think, why they left it in. It's sort of this beautiful final touch to that scene. It's just really wonderful.
Once he opens up his trench coat and starts shooting, the music starts going and it's just chaos. Guns firing for like, I don't know how long it is. It reminded me a little bit of Heat too, just with the nonstop sound and action and all that going.
Yeah.
They get through it. They get in the elevator. Then it's like dead silent. And you see the carnage that they left behind with all the pillars and everything just shut up. You know, the one pillar falls. It's perfect. Yeah, it's really good.
That's an amazing accident to fit into the movie so perfectly. Well, I had a question here, though, because they have a big bomb with them, right? So they jump on an elevator. He hooks onto the elevator cable and he shoots it away. And then he and Trinity go rocketing up and the elevator goes screaming back down and hits the ground. And then there's an explosion. Apparently, it's a mercury switch that's on the bomb, so movement was required to set it off. But otherwise, I don't understand why you have to take the bomb of the elevator at all in the first place. Couldn't you just leave it in the lobby and then take the elevator up and then set the bomb off?
Yeah, it's not as cool, though.
I think that's not as cool. Is there an actual practical reason that I'm missing why they had to send the elevator back down, other than it just looks cool?
I think it was so that they could get up to the roof in time to look down and see that go off, and then you could have one of the terrorists say, "They're using artillery on us."
I think you had to stretch for the Die Hard reference this time around, but that's all right.
I did. I really had to stretch. I think, honestly, I think it was just so that they could have that really great slow motion shot of the fireball and blowing the doors off of the elevator and slowly making its way through the lobby and kicking the door as it goes. It's a really, really cool shot. I don't know what purpose the bomb served.
Yeah.
Right. Just the visuals, I think, mostly. And that's cool. I mean, that's fine. No problem there. But
we got a lot of guns. We need an explosion in this scene. Let's blow something up.
What I should have said was that at that point, Agent Brown and Agent something, Agent Brown comes into the room and he's like, "They're using artillery on us." That would have been better.
That's a better attempt to get to the reference. They cut to the rooftop for where they're fighting. Now we cut to the rooftop fight already in progress.
Yeah.
There is one funny moment here where there's an agent that's or a guy who's coming up behind Neo, and you see Trinity throw the knife and, you know, hits the guy in the head. But if you watch that scene, she holds the post knife throw pose for a good 3 seconds. I looked at it, right? It's pretty funny when you go back and watch it. It looks cool. So she's taking her pose moment. It's her Black Widow landing moment.
She just wanted to make sure that Neo saw that she's the one that saved him.
She's a badass. And then, of course, the bolt time sequence, which I think we've probably already covered. That's truly iconic. That's an iconic moment for sci-fi, adventure, action film, whatever category you want to put it in.
Yeah.
You had the scene right in the beginning with Trinity doing the flying kick in the air, but she wasn't really moving that much. And in this one, he's like bending over backwards and actually moving his arms around as they go 360. And then you got actual bullets traveling through the air, and that's an effect that you'd never seen before.
Things are duplicated and triplicated as he's moving his arm to signify the fast motion.
The agent. You mean the agent?
Well, he does it too, actually. You see the slow motion version of him doing that, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
That's an amazing scene.
Lots of debate on both some of the bullet time stuff and who developed the 360 film style. I read a couple articles when I was researching on this, because different people have claimed to have invented like certain pieces of the process.
Okay. I have to say, whatever everyone else, Matrix did it.
Right. Well, I think the thing is that here they wrote a computer program to be able to take all these still photographs and string them together into what looks like live action, slow motion. That's what's amazing about it.
But it's also, I mean, they're the ones who did it in a commercial success, right? Like, I'm sure other people have done numerous effects, but if you don't show them or have success for it, it's hard to like claim.
Just like with the wire work, you know, all the fighting and the wire work that had been done for a while in Hong Kong, but this is the first time really a Western audience had seen that. And so for us, it was like revolutionary. Meanwhile, if you're like a fan of Hong Kong, you know, action movies, you're probably like, yeah, seen this before.
Yeah, it's like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, right? When they did that.
That was, I think, after The Matrix.
But
in fact, I would dare say that was influenced by The Matrix.
No, I don't think so, because it was Ang Lee.
I guess I mean in terms of, you know, Western excitement and popularity and acceptance of the fighting style. That's what I mean.
By the way, I love that movie.
I love that movie too. Totally agree.
It's all right.
There's an agent who Trinity just hit, you know, shoots point blank in the head, and the agent doesn't move here, right? And she's able to dispatch him. So again, just kind of how and when the agents, you know, are able to move really fast or not, or choose not to move at all. It's a little uneven at time.
He couldn't dodge a bullet.
Yeah, dodge this.
But yeah. Does that mean that she killed the agent? No.
Just de-resed him for a second before then he has to reform.
By the way, all those people that they're killing who are not agents, those are just people that
they're just normal people.
Should be freeing from enslavement, and now they're just killing them. I understand why, but you should probably realize that as well.
Well, what if you just created a program that you could just pop everybody out of their shell at the same time and just cause chaos?
Well, then how are you going to feed all these people too?
You're killing them anyways, right? So you're killing them in the Matrix.
Wouldn't it be effective if they just killed all the people in the Matrix and then they actually die and you're like decreasing their battery power?
So this comes up in the sequels.
I don't remember that, but okay. Maybe I will have to drop it on the sequels.
Well, it was like a choice. Continue on the cycle of saving humanity and then killing Zion and starting up over again, or not doing that.
Just
everyone like creating basically a cataclysmic system crash, all of the humans powering the machines.
It's the true blue screen of death, is what you're saying.
Exactly. Then they all die, and then the machines wipe out Zion, and that's the end of the human race. So this is like a choice that Neo has to make.
What if this is all going on inside each of our computer chips? This keeps repeating.
Do you think you're in a simulation?
Every time I hit simulation. Control-Alt-Delete, it's like I'm Neo.
End task.
It's all these things that are going on you don't know that's happening inside your computer.
All right, so you have the famous helicopter attack sequence. It's pretty interesting when you watch Neo on the minigun initially, because that thing's just, you know, rocking back and forth all over the place.
Yeah, how does he not kill Morpheus?
He peppers the entire room, does not hit Morpheus. So I wanted to give Neo some props on his minigun accuracy, because he's pretty good.
Yeah, I had that exact note. He shoots 100,000 bullets and not one hits Morpheus. That's a great shot. That scene is amazing with the shells falling from below. It's just like a really, really cool shot.
Yeah, amazing visual. It's another, like we mentioned, the shell casings.
Yeah.
Another question I had here, this is why I sent you guys the screenshot, but when did Morpheus put on his purple pants? Because Morpheus jumps and grabs Neo on the helicopter, and as they're swinging through the air, there are several shots where his pants look a lot more purple than they do at any other point in the movie.
I don't know, because I don't know what color pants he had. Yeah. Consider you had to screenshot a very, very grainy looking image. I didn't even know what it was at first. I think it's okay. I think it's all right.
Look, if anyone can rock purple pants, it's probably Morpheus. You can get away with it. He's got the whole look.
I once broke up with a girl for wearing purple pants. Now, it was in the fifth grade, but still.
Did you push her off of a bike?
A moving bike, yeah.
I think I mentioned this to you guys, but I did love that there's an IMDb trivia note. The prepping for the helicopter sequence took 6 months, and then in parentheses, in real life.
In real life, yeah.
It seemed like they got it together pretty quickly from a plan in The Matrix, but...
This is an amazing set. You know, Morpheus takes a running leap out of the building. Neo jumps, catches him in midair, and then they take off, dragging them along through the air in the helicopter. That is just an amazing stunt. To then drop Morpheus, right, and then jump out of the helicopter, land on the roof, and then have Trinity shoot off the other end of the whatever it was, or the rope or whatever they're holding onto, pulling out of the helicopter as it falls away, and then him to
catch her like under her. Yeah. It's amazing.
It's just an amazing stunt.
He is the one.
Yeah, and that realization, oh my God, he is the one. I mean, I've chills just describing it right now.
Well, I think Morpheus at the end of that scene says, Do you believe now, Trinity?
That was just an amazing, amazing sequence.
So what do you think? Do you think Morpheus allowed himself to get captured because he thought that Neo could come save him and thus prove that he was the one?
No.
No. I think he wanted just to save Neo so Neo could go do whatever he needs to do.
But the Oracle did.
Now go do that voodoo that you do so well.
Honestly, from the lobby on to certainly through the subway fight. I mean, the whole last part of this movie is just, it's just pretty amazing. It really is.
And that subway fight, that's probably the best fight sequence in the movie, I think.
Yeah. It might be the best, maybe not the best scene in the movie, because I think the lobby assault might be at the top, but I do love the start of that sequence because you have Agent Smith and Neo basically squared off it's a total Western motif at that moment, right?
Yeah.
So they're on opposite sides. It's this is a gunslinger duel. Instead of tumbleweeds rolling by, you have a couple pieces of loose paper that blow in the wind. Mm-hmm. It's black hat, white hat. It's good guy, bad guy. I mean, it's such a traditional Western gun duel. That's how it starts anyways.
And this is what I love about it. And then it turns into wire work and Hong Kong John Woo film, right? Where they both end up with a gun.
Hard-boiled or something.
Hard-boiled,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then you just got these great homages to like Bruce Lee and stuff. Neo's getting thrown into concrete ceilings and walls and just like crushing them. And yet he just keeps getting back up. It's an amazing fight scene.
There are two moments that I always think of. You know, one is obviously where he gets back up and he has that moment where he cranks his arms dramatically. Yeah. And then
exactly. And you see the dust fly out of his jacket or whatever.
He gives him the universal symbol for come get some, bitch.
Yeah.
I think that's what that hand motion is, right?
Yeah. So, yeah.
The other thing that I really love about that scene is just one little moment where, you know, he goes to punch him and Smith blocks it. And then he flicks out his fingers and gets him in the throat.
Uh-huh.
The little mini throat punch. I love that move because the sound that Agent Smith or Hugo Weaving makes at that moment, it's pretty good. He's like,
yeah. So,
I don't think you can get much strength behind that just with extending your fingers.
Hey, if you're the one.
No, I think it's a great scene. Like the realization of his strength is fantastic. And then also as the scene builds, Agent Smith, you can see getting more and more kind of fearful as he's fighting him. How's this guy still surviving this? How's he still alive, you know?
Right. He keeps getting up. Yeah.
Fantastic.
And he starts off the scene by saying, Mr. Anderson. I just like love it.
My name is Neo.
You know, Neo decides obviously that one beatdown was enough. So when he goes to run, what I love here is he calls the exit information he's given is, go to Wabash and Lake. And can you imagine today, like with how people use their GPSs and don't really pay attention to road names? Like if you said, go to Wabash and Lake, you'd be like, oh, fuck. You have to like pull out your phone, like Wabash Lake, like where do I go? Where do I go? Everybody seems to just know the map of the city. So maybe that's information that must have been downloaded into their head, I guess. I don't know.
So Wabash and Lake is also where that was the exit that I think that Trinity used in the beginning, because he ends up running into the Heart of the City motel from the opening scene.
Oh, I didn't realize that actually. But wasn't her phone booth destroyed?
Now, I think in the beginning they said, oh, there's an old exit at Wabash and Lake. And then obviously this one is. So I'd have to go back and check it, but it's definitely the Heart of the City motel that he runs into.
Is that the hotel that you can't kill each other in?
That's the Continental.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
I had one last question, though. So he runs, and he opens the door, and then he gets shot. So how did they figure out that that's where he was going? How did they get ahead of him there?
They just took over everyone, probably.
I think because they knew that that's where they had gone before, and that's where the room where Trinity was in the opening scene.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, okay. That does make sense. This is where Neo dies. Marcus and I weren't 100% convinced on the love turn with the magical kiss.
Love conquers all.
It's a reverse Disney princess moment is what it is. Or something. I'm not sure, but
I like it. There's like chaos all around them. There's sentinels firing laser beams and there's all these sparks everywhere. And she's just declaring her love to Neo while she's whispering to him. I like it.
I do like the last second drama of it all. I'm not sure if I'm buying that the love can bring him back or I'm not sure.
No, I don't think there was that. But I do think, I sort of feel like he had to first die in order to be really truly become like the Neo who is like the Superman in The Matrix.
So what you're saying is that somebody had to die before being reborn as a being of ultimate power.
Yeah. I mean, I know that's very unique and all.
Is he the Kwisatz Haderach? Did somebody read Dune? Or maybe they just, I don't know, went to church. One of the two, I guess. I don't know.
Everyone loves a good Messiah movie.
Yeah.
Catholic religion. So you're believing that Trinity's in love with Neo?
Yeah.
Do you think Neo loves her back?
Yeah.
Does he?
Yeah. Have you seen her?
I guess. I don't know. That's maybe the part. I mean, I can buy that Trinity has fallen for him, but I never really got that. He was impressed by her and he was like, you know, in awe of her, but I never got.
He plays it cool. Yeah. No, seriously. I bought the whole love story. Or at least that she falls in love with him. I mean, there's that.
Him dying and then still being alive enough to realize like his brain wasn't fully dead at that point. And Trinity brought him back, regardless of the love aspect of it all. Just hearing the voice and her having faith in him. I thought that was a cool scene.
You die in the Matrix, then you die in real life, right? He sort of transcends the Matrix with all his abilities, right?
Yeah.
Well, what's the ultimate ability is to, quote unquote, die in the Matrix, but then not die, overcome that death.
Your mind's more powerful than that.
In the real world, your body doesn't die, right? Because you're able to mentally overcome that death. And so that's sort of like the last step that needs to happen before he can truly become the one. Now, you know, he's resurrected and now has like complete control of everything that's happening in the Matrix.
One thing that's really fun about that end hallway fight sequence, so he pops back up and Smith goes over to him and he starts blocking. And then I just love the fact that he puts one arm behind his back.
It's just like, oh, you're so slow.
Just, I only need one arm for you. That's a fun moment, actually. And then, he jumps into Smith and somehow like blows him apart.
I do love the shot because, they're all three of them, they're basically empty their guns. And then he just like stops the bullets and everything. But once that happens and they've all got their arms extended, they all just sort of like lower their arms in unison. It's just a nice little shot.
Defeat.
Symmetry with movements, right? Because that goes back to even what I mentioned in terms of having the agents pivot and walk away at the same time. It's the agent movement is really effective. Yep. And then at the end, he calls and then he flies away. And arguably one of the first flying superhero moments there is captured on screen, I think.
What?
Yeah, I mean, you're right, because he's wearing like a long coat, right, too. And so it sort of looks like a cape.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, it's a total riff on superhero, Superman type thing, right? Because the cape's flapping behind him.
How are you saying it's a first on screen? Like, does Superman fly?
I mean, first in terms of the modern films, right? I would say that it looks a little bit better than the Richard Donner version of Superman. But yes, you are correct. There was Superman flying around before.
There's all Superman 2, Superman 3, Superman 4. Come on now.
They have the same thing in the sequels, but his outfit, he's dressed like a monk. But then when he flies, it looks like a cape.
I read in the new one, he's going preppy.
Yeah, he is.
He's got a Letterman jacket. He's like, taking down a notch.
Long hair, a banana hammock, and maybe some chaps.
He's going with the Borat.
The mankini. He's wearing a mankini.
Anything else you guys want to say about the movie itself or any key scenes you want to talk about?
Yeah, I think we talked about them all.
I think we did.
Jesus Christ. Did you know that apparently Michael Hutchins, from NXS, he was cast in this movie in a major role? But he died 3 years after he learned that he got the role.
He was going to be Switch?
I don't know. I've looked everywhere. No one seems to know who he was going to play.
Did you know that Neo's passport actually expires on September 11th, 2001?
I do.
When Agent Smith is going through the binder, that's one of the pieces of information that I guess gets flashed up in front of you.
The Wachowskis planned 9/11.
I'm sure. Yeah, of course. And then the other thing I thought was interesting is when they built the pods for Neo when they were, when he was doing his wake up, his birth scene, apparently they didn't heat the goo the first time around. They put somebody in there to test it out. They got hypothermia in 8 minutes.
Yeah.
So they had to pull him out. Oops. And they're like, okay, I guess we need to heat this thing.
Whoops.
I just thought that was interesting.
We need to make it like a hot tub.
And I have no more interesting trivia. Let me ask you guys, Colin, what did you learn from this movie?
What did I learn from it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's fair.
I don't think I learned anything. I mean, I learned that you can look like a complete badass if you just wear some black latex.
I don't think that's going to work for you.
No, I don't think so either.
I just would like to go on record and say that I would prefer that didn't happen.
You ever seen Pulp Fiction? I think that's what I would look like.
I learned you should take the blue pill.
I think I learned two things. One is that it's fun to see a truly original concept, especially like a big budget sci-fi, and go back and experience this again. It seems like everything that we're seeing today is just known IP and it's just recycling stuff. So it's just kind of fun to go back and see a movie that wowed you because it was something totally unexpected and you didn't know what you were going for. And the other thing I would say is that this is a great example of when you pair an actor with the material perfectly, in this case, Keanu Reeves, you get spectacular results. You know, nobody ahead of time was thinking, oh, Keanu Reeves, you know, huge action star, that's the way that we should go here. But the right material, the right actor, put them together, and it's golden. I think that Keanu Reeves is pretty awesome in this movie. It's very entertaining.
I agree.
100%.
Your closing thoughts, Marcus.
Fantastic to watch an original movie. Thrilling when it came out. Really enjoyed it still on the rewatch. I give it a solid A, 2 thumbs up. Fun. Lots of green.
Oh, we're doing thumbs up?
I don't know. I give it thumbs, A's. Just the A? I give it an A.
No, you can keep your thumbs there too. Colin.
Completely unexpected and amazing right out of the gate. I would dare say it was revolutionary at the time. I love this movie. I've watched it many, many, many times. And it totally holds up. As far as a letter grade, if there's somewhere in between A and A+, that's where I think this falls. I just can't give it an A plus because of APOC, Switch, Tank, Dozer, Mouse, and did I miss someone? I don't know. They're just all forgettable.
I hate every fucking actor in this movie, so I can't give it an A plus, is what you're saying?
I love all of the leads and everyone else. Just who are they? It's just such a great movie. And I, for the life of me, I have no idea why Tom does not like this movie.
Yeah.
Or why my son will choose to never watch it on principle because I wanted him to at one point when he was in his rebellious phase. That's funny. Hopefully Dylan will give another shot at some point.
Come on, Dylan. Just watch the movie. You'll like it. It was lame.
Speaking of movies, by the way, somebody want to make a movie pick here?
Oh, Christ. Are we still doing that?
We didn't pick any of the ones I picked. We'll just change it again. Why bother?
Colin, you had a movie that you wanted to do, I think, right?
Yeah, but let me pick a movie that we'll end up never doing.
Okay, let's do that. We'll add it to the pile.
I've got several movies.
I've got a list.
I've got several movies that I want to pick.
How about this? You throw out one, Marcus will throw out one, then the three of us will vote.
All right. Okay. That's fine.
I guess I might end up being the tiebreaker, I guess. So,
first of all, I think we should do Red Notice. Just for as a nice palate cleanser.
It's probably a 20-minute conversation, but okay, that's a possibility. What else you got?
Well, Marcus, you go.
I want to do Edward Scissorhands because I think it would just be fun.
You just want to piss off Dave.
Here's the thing. I'll do Edward Scissorhands. I mean, and I will go in with the starting position of absolutely fucking hating that movie. So, and we'll see if maybe my opinion changes. The only movie I've walked out where everybody around me was like, oh, it was magical, magical. I'm like, that was hot garbage. Okay, so we'll be back with something, possibly Edward Scissorhands. What else was on your list, Marcus?
We ready to do Pulp Fiction?
Oh, I'm not ready yet. We got to save that.
Enemy of the State would be a fun one. The Saint would be a fun one.
Oh, The Saint might be an interesting rewatch.
Haven't seen that in a while. A little Val Kilmer.
All right, tell you what. Why don't we discuss it offline and we'll figure it out because we're not making our pick. Could possibly be back with Edward Scissorhands or...
Red Notice or The Saint.
Red Notice.
I'll tell you the movie.
Also, wait, I'm just going to recap the movies that we said we were going to do and have not done so far, include True Romance, Booksmart, Children of Men. What else have we said we were going to do? We're going to watch some important prestige film. Ah, fuck it. Let's watch Starship Troopers instead. yeah, we're on brand, so that's good. All right, we'll just leave it here.
I'll just tell you what the movie, because I said it was like an older movie. I think it would be great. 1981's Excalibur.
Excalibur's not a bad movie. Well, you know what we do have in the backlog? We have an unreleased Snyder Cut 2.0 conversation.
We do.
Yeah, the three of us, we do.
I don't even remember doing it.
Again, on brand. Thank you. So,
how can I talk about it? I've never seen it.
Well, you could talk about a lot of movies you've never seen.
That's true. At least.
All right. Let's just wrap this, guys.
Okay. Let's wrap.
All right. Well, hope you enjoyed our conversation about The Matrix. Hope we're not all trapped in a simulation because, I don't know, recently the simulation's been going the wrong direction. So, but on that depressing note, I guess we'll just say... This is the Real DMC Podcast, signing off. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Harris.
Goodbye.
I made fun of it during the big jump, the rooftop jump, and he's like, whoa. But, oh my God, I think he might be the only person who could just nail that line. And when you watch the movie, I just want to say, whoa, back.
Whoa.
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 Whoa. By the way, one of those two agents, you guys ever seen the show Longmire or heard of that show? It was on Netflix.
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
So it takes place in like Wyoming or Montana. It's a pretty good show. It's like Sheriff Longmire. The guy who plays Sheriff Longmire's name is Robert Taylor. I did not know this until, and he's like in his probably early 60s. I did not know this, but he's one of the agents. And then when I realized that, I was like, oh my God, that is. He's like one of those agents. And you couldn't stop seeing it. It was like so amazing. Oh my God, when I realized that, holy shit.
It's probably more impactful if we've seen Longmire, I guess.